This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Sam Sanders, in for Shumita Basu. Today, nostalgia and why we long for decades we didn't live through. You may have noticed a trend recently. Gen Z is feeling super nostalgic for the 1990s. So many people in their teens and 20s seem to have an affinity for CDs and flip phones, point-and-shoot cameras, 90s clothing like bootcut jeans and slip dresses. I'm personally obsessed with their reclaiming of 90s sunglasses trends. To see any and all of this, just go on any social media platform.
The 90s aesthetic.
When I think of 90s makeup, I either think of supermodel glam or grunge.
Start with a t-shirt, jeans, and an oversized top.
The shoes, I gotta go with the Chucks, man. Everybody was wearing these back then.
Listen to the music you love on physical media.
This is so cool because it's actual physical music.
CD, vinyl records, and even cassette tapes.
I just made a very impulsive decision. I bought a flip phone.
A phone without smartphone functionality.
Our inspo is Drew Barrymore, Winona Ryder, and my mom.
Thing is, most of these people didn't actually live through the 90s. They have no individual personal memory of that era. So where is all the nostalgia coming from? What is causing it? And what does nostalgia do for us psychologically? To get the answers to these questions, I wanted to talk to an expert on the topic.
One of the common misconceptions of nostalgia, I think, is that it represents a rejection of progress and a desire to go back to the way things were.
That's Clay Rutledge. He's a psychologist and the author of the book, Past Forward, How Nostalgia Can Help You Live a More Meaningful Life. Clay is currently the executive vice president and COO of the nonpartisan think tank, the Archbridge Institute. Clay argues that while nostalgia gets a bad rap, it actually has a ton of psychological benefits.
I believe nostalgia is really a future-oriented experience. You're nostalgic because you have to face the day and you have to plan for tomorrow and you're looking for ideas.
I sat down with Clay to talk about what's really fueling Gen Z's 90s nostalgia, when attachment to the past can be damaging, and how we can use nostalgia in healthy, meaningful ways.
I guess we need to start by having you clearly and fully defining nostalgia. My understanding is that the earliest definition medically of nostalgia was, I don't know, a medical malady, something not good.
Yeah, definitely. So the term nostalgia was coined back in 1688, and it was definitely coined to represent what was believed to be a brain disease.
A brain disease. Nostalgia was a brain disease.
Right. Wow. Specific to Swiss mercenaries. So very particular.
I didn't know they did mercenary stuff over there. They seem so nice.
Yeah, they seem so nice. But I guess back in the day, they would be recruited to come down from their alpine homes and help fight wars in the plains of Europe.
Wow.
And what military doctors at that time noticed was that these mercenaries were miserable. And they were telling stories at home, singing songs at home. And so the thought was, oh, it's them telling stories and singing songs about home that's making them miserable. I don't know why it didn't dawn on them that maybe it was fighting wars on the plains of Europe.
That
was the thing making them miserable.
Yeah.
But, you know, really nostalgia meant homesickness back then. And now we think of it as differently. But that was the early history. You're right. And what's funny is there were all sorts of speculations, including that it was a demonic origin. Right, that some kind of demonic forces were causing nostalgia. Some people hypothesize that the clanging of the cowbells in the Swiss Alps caused damage to the middle ear, which ultimately led to this sentiment for home.
Whoa.
So there were some very wild speculations about nostalgia. But well into the 20th century, it was thought of, if not as a brain disease, as some kind of psychological or psychiatric condition. Even in the American...
A negative one.
A negative one, right? And in the American Civil War, thousands of Union soldiers were fighting in the
Seems
South.
Seems as if war is a common thread.
Right?
Here,
we're diagnosed with nostalgia, right? So it spread to other populations, but it was still very much a disease. I think you can find official diagnoses of nostalgia as a disease up until World War I, actually.
And then what happens? it changes in the American psyche, at least.
Well, medical science advanced and people figured out that, well, this is a disease. And then with the rise of modern psychology, you started to see the ability to more surgically separate homesickness, which was really more specific to anxiety related to missing home, from a broader longing for the past, which we think of now as nostalgia.
Huh.
And then psychologists such as myself and others about 25 years ago said, well, we need more systematic empirical research around this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when we started conducting, you know, laboratory experiments to see like, okay, what causes nostalgia? When people engage in nostalgia, what's it actually do to them psychologically? And then, you know, really start to explore the underlying psychological processes involved in nostalgia. And so that's what we started doing, you know, in the early 2000s.
So we have always been nostalgic in some way, regardless of the word we used for it or whether we thought it was good or bad. So next question then, if we've always been nostalgic, what benefit does nostalgia serve human beings evolutionarily?
Yeah. And you're right. We've always been nostalgic. I mean, if even well before the word was coined, I mean, you can look at ancient literature and see essentially what is a description of nostalgia, right?
Mm.
So as far as what it does for us from a basic psychology or basic evolutionary perspective is our research indicates that nostalgia can be thought of really as what we call a self-regulatory resource. And so what that means is you can be nostalgic for lots of reasons, right? You hear an old song on the radio, you run into an old friend, you see a commercial on TV that directly triggers nostalgia because it's a sensory input that reminds you of something from the past. But internally, when it comes to your own brain, we typically become the most nostalgic when we're experiencing negative psychological states, like sadness or loneliness or anxiety. So nostalgia is really triggered internally by dissatisfaction.
But the nostalgia is trying to help us maybe be happier?
Right. So that's why we call it a self-regulatory resource, because what happens is it doesn't stop there. Like, you feel dissatisfied or distressed in some way.
Mm-hmm.
That orients you towards the past nostalgically. You start looking to the past. But the reason you're doing it is, first of all, to comfort yourself, because to give a specific example, loneliness is a big trigger of nostalgia. So you feel socially disconnected in some way. Maybe you just moved to a new city, or you're going off to college, or there's some reason why you're separated from your usual social network. You feel lonely. And then you start reflecting on nostalgic memories of meaningful social experiences from the past. That comforts you, first of all, because it reminds you, despite your current situation, there are people that love you, right? Mm-hmm. So it helps you downregulate that negative feeling that's associated with loneliness. But critically, it's self-regulatory because it also reminds you, hey, you've had experiences in the past that were socially fulfilling, which suggests that despite the fact you're lonely right now, you can have socially fulfilling experiences in the future. And so nostalgia doesn't just make you feel less lonely. It turns out that it actually motivates you and gives you the confidence to engage in activities that build new social relationships or connect you again with old social relationships.
How is that complicated by a certain kind of Gen Z nostalgia that is looking back at a time they didn't live through? When I am nostalgic for the 90s, it is because I lived through it. I was there.
Right.
So many of the benefits you just described happen because you're nostalgic for a good thing that you experienced before. Do you get the same benefits if you are nostalgic for a thing you didn't experience yourself?
So there seems to be some evidence that you can get the same benefits. Typically, we think of nostalgia as being autobiographical. So the Gen Z nostalgia for the 90s, that speaks to this other type of nostalgia, which I refer to as historical nostalgia. It's when people feel sentimental for a time that predates them. If you think about personal nostalgia as a bank of memories that you can draw upon when you need comfort or inspiration or guidance, think about historical nostalgia as operating perhaps similarly, which is if you see cultural experiences shared and you're like, oh, those were meaningful to people in the past, maybe I can do the same thing. And so part of it's inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing that's really cool about Gen Z being nostalgic for the 90s is at some level, they seem to be borrowing from this broader cultural bank of potentially useful and meaningful memories, and using those in, I think, really creative ways that speak to how culture changes and how we innovate and how we borrow from the past to create new ideas for the future. And I think Gen Z is doing that in a lot of interesting ways to grapple with a whole range of anxieties and concerns they have.
Anxieties and concerns they have. Let's run through those briefly. What are they from your research?
So at my day job, which is working at a nonpartisan think tank called the Archbridge Institute, we do a lot of national surveys on public attitudes. Mm-hmm. And we've done surveys on nostalgia, and we've also just done surveys more generally on how people, not just young people, but all Americans, think about technology and think about pressing social and technological issues. And one thing we find with young people is, on the one hand, they're extremely open-minded about the future. They want to learn about new technologies, but they worry about how it's going to affect them. So they're worried about what's AI going to do to their career planning, for instance. And so in a lot of studies, we find things like the majority of Gen Z adults will say that they're worried that social media is dividing us more than it's uniting us. Mm-hmm. So they have specific concerns like that. Mm-hmm. 75% of Gen Z say they're worried that social media is bad for mental health. And then we're also seeing vast majority of Gen Z report that not only are they nostalgic for previous times in their own lives, they happen to be especially nostalgic for, as we talked about, for times that predate them. And specifically times that seem to predate the shift from offline analog life to more online digital life. And that's what their nostalgia is pointing them towards.
This is what I keep theorizing in my elder millennial brain. When I see Gen Z nostalgia, it seems to me that a lot of it is a craving for a life before the smartphone, a life before constantly being on camera and performing for cameras to your friends and to strangers. Is it all about the big divide in the way we live our lives that the introduction of the smartphone brought?
I think that's a big part of the story, and your intuitions are correct about that, because if you...
So it's all about Apple, right? That's what we're saying. This is an iPhone conversation.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the current Gen Z tech trends is a nostalgia for early iPhones.
The early iPhones?
The early iPhones. So they're still... Okay. They're smartphones, but they like the pre-AI manipulation of photos.
Oh.
So it's still digital photography, but they're into the way they look. And they like that they're limiting it in a way. And it doesn't mean they don't have the new iPhone. So one thing I think is interesting is if you talk to a lot of people involved in these kind of retro tech trends, they have the new iPhone because they like all the features it offers and makes their lives more efficient and easy. But they might want to go out in the evening and be like, you know what? I don't want to bring that. I want to bring the old iPhone because I just want a camera. And you're seeing that not just with phones. Like, for instance, I saw the other day a story in the Wall Street Journal about how shopping malls are making a comeback. And it's Gen Z.
Thank goodness. I loved the shopping mall in my day, Clay. I tell you what,
I
really did.
I know. It was good, right? Here's the irony, though. How are they learning about this? So they're learning about a pre-digital life on digital
online.
Device, right? Right? Online, right?
Digital devices are teaching them about life before those devices.
Yeah. And it's leading to, I think, some interesting, like, innovative ways of doing things.
Mm.
One of the common misconceptions of nostalgia, I think, is that it represents a rejection of progress and a desire to go back to the way things were. If you really dig into most people's views, they don't want to go back to the way things were.
Let me raise my hand right now and say I would go back to 1996 anytime. Anytime.
So you might be the exception.
Yes.
Most people don't want to, for instance, give up, you know, medical advances that have been made over the last few decades, right?
Yeah.
So there are certain aspects of life where people are like, you know, we've made real progress in these areas, and I don't, you know, I don't want to give that up. But what they're saying through nostalgia is, but we've also maybe lost some things or we've forgotten some things.
Mm.
And I would like to bring those ideas into the present, not to reject the progress we've made, but to say that we can make more progress and we can improve things more by recognizing that there are important elements from the past that we are neglecting. And just real quickly to add to that, and this is newer research, which I think is really useful for thinking about that. There's now more and more work distinguishing nostalgia from another past-oriented sentiment that we call declinism. And so declinism is the feeling that things are worse now than they were in the past. Things are only getting worse and the past was better. And it turns out that's not really correlated with nostalgia. So people who feel warm and sentimental for the past aren't necessarily the same people who say things are just getting worse. And it turns out declinism is really more of a problem at fueling political division and social conflict and just honestly the pessimistic and divisive mindset that's a barrier to coming together and getting things done.
Yeah. Could you say that declinism is, I don't know, nostalgia's evil twin? You outlined earlier a lot of the positive benefits of feeling nostalgic.
Yeah.
Declinism seems to not offer those positive benefits.
Absolutely. And the research supports that idea because, for instance, studies find if you induce nostalgia, so if you have people spend a few minutes thinking about a nostalgic memory that they're sentimental for, they feel subsequently more socially connected and they actually become more supportive of things like technological innovation. Like when you feel connected, when you feel secure, you're just more open-minded, right? When they induce declinism by having people think about ways in which things have just gotten worse, it actually makes them feel less connected. It makes them feel more isolated, more alienated. And that causes people to retract and become more dogmatic and defensive, so less open-minded. And so not only are nostalgia and declinism distinct experiences, they push people in distinct directions.
Mm. We've brought up politics now, talking about declinism. How do you see current events politically influencing this current nostalgic moment?
Yeah. So in my book, Pass Forward, I gave the advice in there of if you feel like you're nostalgic and you are getting some personal benefits from it, it's good for your well-being. But if for some reason you feel like your nostalgia is making you see the world in a pessimistic light, then you're doing it wrong. You're doing more of the declinism. When you see political figures and thought leaders or social media influencers that traffic in the kind of outrage economy, where the way they get clicks and likes and support is by telling you how everything's gone wrong and how the path forward is to reclaim the past in some way, they're not actually using nostalgia. They are using more of that like declinist sort of zero-sum mindset that the only way forward is to reject like progress and to return the old ways of doing things. But that's not really what nostalgia in our research makes people do. It's actually nostalgia is a more open and creative and kind of inclusive experience. So when you feel warm about the past nostalgically, it often makes you feel inspired and more empathetic. It increases social trust. It makes you do the things that are the opposite of what those more negative messages are doing. So I always tell people to kind of beware of that kind of false nostalgia or that kind of dark, you know, I used to call it like a dark or false nostalgia, but now we have the research on declinism, which is, I think, gives it a nice, another way of really thinking about that distinction between a past-oriented sentimentality that helps you mind the past for the good and for the inspirational, but also doesn't make you have complete rose-colored glasses about the past.
It's funny, this is an aside, but a thing that I have been obsessed with as a 41-year-old watching Gen Z be nostalgic for not even just the 90s, but like the 2000s, the early 2000s, the aughts. I see a lot of online a nostalgia for the way that we used to go out to the club. We would go is without smartphones or with like cameras and taking pictures, but there was no social media video involved. And we also dressed like in business casual. Seriously, it was very strange. And on the one hand, I see people younger than me looking back on the wardrobe, particularly that black kids like me would wear to clubs in our 20s and say, oh my God, they dressed up. But what they don't know is that we often dressed up to go to nightclubs because that was still a time when these racist bars would have arbitrary dress codes that they would use just to keep black men and women from going to the club. And yeah, it's like, long story short, I think the danger is in being nostalgic for a past that wasn't actually just for everybody. You know, when politicians harken back to the 50s.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, who was that life better for?
Yeah.
Not everybody. Not women, not black people, not brown people, not queer people. I sometimes feel guilty then when I am nostalgic.
Yeah.
What can I do with that guilt?
So I understand that, and the way you articulate that makes total sense. And the good news is I don't think you need to feel guilty because, like I said, when people engage in nostalgia, they're not really saying, I want to go back to the past as it was.
Mm.
And a lot of trends have interesting stories, I think, that aren't always positive and aren't always pleasant, but they're redemptive.
Mm.
And that turns out to match personal nostalgia quite well, actually, because when we did research and had people write down or detail in writing a nostalgic memory, and then we analyzed them, we found that a lot of nostalgic memories follow what we call a redemptive sequence. And that is, they have elements of negativity in them.
Mm-hmm.
They might have struggle, sadness, embarrassment, failure, followed by triumph.
Okay.
And so we often have nostalgic memories that are not just purely pleasant experiences. You know, they're not just that time we went on a cool beach vacation.
Mm.
They're experiences of where we grew as people, where we triumphed over adversity, where we were tested and figured out we were actually stronger than we thought they were.
Nostalgia kind of shows us that we can do things and all kinds of different things and like get through stuff because we did it before.
And we've been through a lot. And, you know, when I started doing this research, I was a professor at the University of Southampton, and we were collecting nostalgic narratives from older British adults.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, you know, 25 years ago. And many of those older adults were children during World War II. And Southampton is on the southern coast, and it's a port, and it was bombed heavily by German bombing. So a good portion of the city was destroyed. A lot of these people, older adults, had actual nostalgic memories from that time. And you would say, well, that was a horrible time. None of them wanted to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But what they'll tell you is that was a story of like family resilience.
Mm.
Of when their family was really close together and what was important in life was pretty revealed. And so their nostalgia for that time isn't a desire to return to it. It's a desire to learn from it.
Mm.
And we're seeing the same thing with COVID. There are actually cases of people talking about nostalgia for COVID. And again, nobody wants COVID to happen again. It was a very stressful and anxiety-provoking time, an uncertain time. But you're seeing some people say, well, during that time, I learned something important.
Yeah. I mean, I remember those COVID lockdowns. It was, gosh, bad.
Yeah.
But I also remember my life in that moment of lockdown getting smaller and quieter.
Right.
In some good ways. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I will look back favorably on some of those COVID work from home lockdown days and remember how good all that quiet felt.
Yeah.
It felt good.
Yeah. And then maybe you take a little piece of that and, you know, the way nostalgia works is the self-regulatory resources. You're not saying, well, I want to go back to lockdowns, but you're saying something happened during that time where my life was a little simpler. And maybe I can take a little piece of that and the decisions I'm making going forward to make choices that will make my life a little bit simpler in the future. So
nostalgia is an invitation.
It is. That's a great way of putting it.
I love this. So then if we can look at nostalgia as an invitation, what is our current nostalgia boom telling us about what we feel is missing right now? What is this current nostalgia boom inviting us to do or to assess differently?
I think there's a number of things happening. One is something we've touched on, which is technology, which is, again, people don't want to reject technology. They love the ways in which technological progress has made their lives easier, but they want balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Balance is a big part of the story. This is what Gen Z is doing with all the retro tech, those trends that they're driving, whether it's the increase in independent bookstores, which I don't, you know, since we're both from, you know, remember the 90s, you remember well that we were told that Amazon killed the bookstore.
Yeah.
Well, bookstores are growing. Independent bookstores are growing. And the reason they're growing is because young people in particular want to go to places where they can have tactile, interactive experience. They want to go to book clubs. They want to talk to other people that are into the same thing. They like board games. They like vinyl records. They're buying cassette tapes, which I never thought those would make a comeback. I was at a concert the other day full of young people, and the band was selling cassette tapes of their music.
Don't do 8-tracks next. I tried those once. Just no.
Right? So that, I think that's part of it, is that story of technological disruption, which I think we're going to see even more with the rise of AI, because a lot of people are pulling back from social media and pulling back from platforms where they just feel like they can't tell what's real.
Mm-hmm.
And they want nostalgia as a way to feel more authentic and to feel more human and more connected. And people are definitely looking for that sense of humanity in the age of AI. Again, not because they don't think AI has the potential to do great things, you know, scientific and medical innovations and, you know, all sorts of other things that could be quite good, but they don't want it to replace the human experience, right? And then I think there's the, you know, something we touched on with politics and social life. And I see this as an encouraging sign. There's all sorts of polls showing that Americans, even though they are polarized and divided, they're exhausted with it, right? They're tired of being pushed to outrage and feel like they can't trust their fellow Americans. And so I think there's part of this nostalgia is also a desire to get back to in-person community where you actually talk face-to-face to people, because it's just much harder to be mean. It's much harder to dislike people when you interact with them face-to-face. And so I think there's a longing for that too. And I believe, and you know, this is why I titled my book Past Forward, I believe nostalgia is really a future-oriented experience.
Okay.
Because you are nostalgic not because you have a time machine and can go back. You're nostalgic because you have to face the day and you have to plan for tomorrow. And you're looking for ideas. The future hasn't happened yet. You can't go there to mine ideas because it's uncertain.
Yeah.
And so nostalgia helps you step out of the present and look backwards and say, well, what can I pull from? What can I borrow? What can I utilize from my bank of memories? And increasingly, we're finding, as we've talked about, from our broad shared bank of cultural memories and experiences that transcend my individual experiences, what can I borrow from that, not to repeat it, but to innovate and to refresh it and to do something new?
Clay, I like this chat. I feel motivated and inspired. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Sam. It was great to chat.
Clay Rutledge wrote the book Past Forward: How Nostalgia Can Help You Live a More Meaningful Life. You can find it on Apple Books. We'll include a link to it on our show notes page. And every weekend, you can find new episodes of Apple News in Conversation in the Apple News app. Just tap on the audio tab, a little headphones at the bottom, to find it.